Welcome, one and all, to Learn Japanese Pod. You are listening to the Fun Friday edition of the podcast. And if you don't know what that is, it's when we throw away, or temporarily put away, I should say, our Japanese textbooks and talk to cool people doing cool stuff in Japan. And this week, I am joined by my wonderful friend, Andy.
Hey, welcome to Fun Friday.
You have definitely got the Genkis.
I have the Genkis.
And you've definitely got the Fun Fridays. Hey, Andy, good to see you again.
It's wonderful to see you again.
Thank you for coming. This is all good fun. Andy, how are you doing?
You know, I have to say, can I? Was that a rhetorical question where you just say, oh, I'm fine, and you? Or are you actually wondering?
No. We're not doing textbook English today. I actually wanted to know how you are, amazingly.
I'm frustrated.
Oh, dear.
Because we have now extended, this is our little time capsule, so we know when you did this.
Right.
We've now extended the state of emergency in Tokyo that was supposed to be done at the end of May to June 20th. So yes. I love this country, and normally I'm very impressed by its country, the people, and the nature, all this stuff. I am nonplussed by how we've handled the acquisition or lack thereof of vaccines.
Nonplussed, Andy. What's your language there? This is a family show.
You could always beep it out, right?
Right, exactly.
Like if I said
Andy, you're making me blush already. Hey, so listen, on today's agenda, there's a reason I have you here, Andy. I have a secret plot, shall we say. There's a reason you're here. And the reason is because I sent an email and a tweet to all the listeners of Learn Japanese Pod saying, hey, do you have a question about life in Japan? We'd love to answer it on the podcast. And so I have roped you, maybe wittingly or unwittingly, into this whole affair so we can pick your brains and get your ideas about life in Japan, and hopefully we can answer some of these questions.
Consider me roped.
awesome. Sounds like a shibari joke there. So if there are children listening, don't listen.
Or at least don't translate.
Don't translate that. So basically what happened was, so here's the good news. We got over 45 questions. That's amazing. So it's such an amazing response.
You've got a great community.
We have an amazing community. So thank you so much to everyone who wrote in. Now, the bad news is we got 45 questions, and there is no way we are going to be able to answer all these questions on this here podcast today, Andy. It's not, we're going to be bending the space and time continuum. It's not possible.
It could be the Wagnerian ring cycle of Learn Japanese Pod.
Yes. Is it possible we could do a 24-hour podcast? Just one thing. Da, 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 kill the wabbit.
But really, do we have anything better to do?
We don't have anything better to do. And remember, a podcast is made by people with an internet connection and a mic. You don't necessarily have to know anything. So with that caveat aside, you're going to hear two guys shoot their mouths. First piece of advice, don't listen to anything we say. But with that in mind, so this is how we're going to do it. So first of all, the first questions we're going to answer are from premium members. That's people who very, very kindly subscribe to our premium Japanese travel course. They get first dibs on questions. Then what we did was we grouped some of the questions together because some people ask some similar questions. So that would be a bit more efficient. And then the rest of the questions, we'll just answer as many as we can. So we won't get them all done today. So if you wrote in and you didn't get your question answered, we profusely apologize. But I'm thinking of maybe using your questions for future podcasts or perhaps blog posts. Or I might even do a vlog where I answer them on video. So if you didn't get it answered this time, please wait. Please be patient. I will eventually get round to doing it. So does that make sense? Is that cool?
Completely. It sounds like a brilliant idea.
So without further ado, let's jump into the first question. And this is from Angie-san. Now, Angie-san is a wonderful, wonderful person. She's a member of the Discord channel.
Nice.
If you haven't become a member, please become a member. Go to Learn Japanese Pod and click on Discord channel and you can become a member too. And she's an awesome member of the community. I humbly bow in your direction, Angie. Anyway, she asks, did you have to learn how to use those funny sticky rollers for dusting while living in Japan? Also, right, Nihongo de nanto imasu ka? So, Andy, what's she talking about?
So it comes as no surprise, I think, to anybody that Japanese people are very fastidiously clean.
Yes.
And I don't know if this isn't a Japanese only thing, but certainly it's found a natural home in Japan. And it looks like a paint roller, right? Except for the roller. I'm holding one of these in my hand. I'm over here at Alex's place and he's got one of these. He's got a fancy one, actually. it looks like a paint roller, but the roller on itself is these adhesive strips.
Mm.
And basically what you do is you rub it across everything in your house and it picks up all the dust and hair and
lint
and stuff. Yeah. And then when it doesn't stick to stuff anymore, you just, you know, basically rip off that layer and throw it away. Is that the one that you have? You have a plastic case on it, so I can't see how it works.
Take it off. There you go.
Oh, there you go. So it's the same thing.
So it looks exactly like a paint roller, except the roller itself, as Andy said, has an adhesive sticker on the outside. So you roll it over stuff and it just picks up all the rubbish.
And you throw it away when it gets all sticky, and then there's another layer of adhesive
underneath. Yeah.
So the same one we got at my place.
And to finally answer your question, Angie-san, the Japanese is roller cleaner. Roller cleaner. There you go. That's it in Japanese. Great question, Angie. Thank you very much. And yoroshiku onegaishimasu. And diochen vaur, which is Welsh for thank you.
Oh, there you go.
Okay. Next question. This is from Daniel Green. And Daniel Green asks, why is there such a difference in male and female words/sentence structure? Which is a really, really good question. I can tell you that there is a difference.
Mm-hmm.
As to why there is a difference is a very, very deep question. All I can think of is we know that Japanese culture is maybe more traditional and conservative compared with countries, say, in maybe Europe and America, and that the gender roles are more clearly defined, I think, in Japan. That's one background.
Yeah, I mean, I'll go even a step further. You know, young people and old people have different languages.
Oh, sure.
Whether you're talking to the person you work for or who works for you, you talk differently. I think that maybe it's because the Japanese language has less of a vocabulary than, for example, English. Mm. I think that Japan makes up for it by stratifying on a number of different axes how you organize the hierarchical structure, which is so important. I mean, Japan, if you didn't know who's above or below you in the hierarchical structure, Japan would spin off of its axis, right? Japan wouldn't work as Japan anymore. And so, you know, there's the old people, there's young people, there's men, there's women, which is, yes, a bit sexist, but it's been that way for hundreds of years, and hopefully it's going to change, but not yet. There's young people, old people, senpai, kohai, you know, those honorifics are required in Japanese language. And now, why do Japanese females and males speak differently? I think it is a cultural tradition, but I think it also is part of that delineation of different parts of society.
Very good answer, Andy. I agree with that 110%. When I had Tomo Akiyama on the podcast before, we talked a little about some questions that you get asked by Japanese people that might make you lift an eyebrow. One of them is, you'll sometimes ask, how old are you? And it's generally, you know, they say, never ask a lady her age. Well, asking anyone their age can sometimes be a little inappropriate, depending on the circumstance. But what he was saying is a lot of the time they ask you your age because They want to figure out where you are in the hierarchy, and they don't want to use the inappropriate language.
Mm-hmm.
So actually, it's through trying to be polite, they actually ask a question that some foreigners feel is a little too direct.
Dude, watch the news on any day. Any person with a caption, there's a number in parentheses after their name.
Oh, that's their age. Right.
Age is a super important metric of where they are in the social structure. And it's not inappropriate to ask somebody their age. It's also not an embarrassment to be an old person in Japan, right? I think that's part of the, you know, understanding the structure and you know, who reports to who, if you think of it that way.
I'm so glad we've got Andy on the podcast. Someone who sounds intelligent and actually might be intelligent too.
Well, I'm halfway through this beer, so I've got another good 15 minutes in me.
Of IQ left in you. No, but it's a real truism, you know. It's Japanese society is very stratified, as you said, on different axes. So that's a really good one.
I'm not saying that's tremendously positive. I think that that's as much of a limiting thing as anything else, but it is the way it is at this point.
I would imagine it's changing a little bit
now.
It is.
Yep.
There's always that continual complaint by older people that young people don't know how to use keigo, which is the very high level, polite style of the language that's used in business and used to people who are higher up in the social hierarchy than you are. But I suppose old people have been complaining about young people for
as long as there have been young people.
Exactly. So I hope that, Daniel, I hope that answers some of your questions.
Good questions, man. Good.
These are really, really good questions. Okay, next one is from Mariana. She is another Travel Japanese member. So thank you very much for writing your question. She says, shall we use di or she when listing several activities? I don't get the difference between them. Okay. I know what you're talking about here. I can explain this. So in Japanese, when you are listing several activities, there are various grammatical structures you can use. One of them is shi, and the other one is shitari. So basically, shi, you want to think of it as meaning and. So for example, tsukareteru, atama ga itai shi, kibun ga warui. So basically, tsukareteru, I'm tired. Atama ga itai shi, my head hurts, I've got a headache, shi, and kibun ga warui, I just feel kind of sick. So again, shi, just think of it as and. However, for shitari, you usually use that when you're listing things that you typically do in a certain situation, and it means something like, I do things like so-and-so, or etc., etc., etc. So it's a vague way to say that you do various things, but you're not being very specific. So for example, you can say, shūmatsu ni tabetari, hon o yondari, neru. So on the weekend, shūmatsu ni, on the weekend, tabetari, I do stuff like eating, hon o yondari, I do stuff like reading a book, and neru, and I sleep. And neru is really Japanese that means sleep, or really it kind of means I just like to chill and do nothing. So I hope that answers your question. Does that make sense? Very good grammar question there.
And a wonderful explanation, if I might say.
Oh, domo arigato. By the way, just to let everyone know, I am paying Andy in beer to appear on this podcast.
Actually, he's not.
Oh, right. You bought the beers. You're paying yourself with beers. Hey, Andy, cheers.
Cheers.
Man, it's good to have you on the podcast
again.
It's
always a pleasure.
Next question is from Lutz, pronounced Lutz. And Lutz says, I've heard that addresses in Japan are very different compared to Western addresses, including that apparently Japan doesn't have street names, but rather block names. Could you share some insight into your experience with street names?
Can we?
Here's some insider information. Actually, Japan does have street names, but it's usually large streets, not small streets where you have residential areas. It's usually, in England, what we'd call dual carriageway or bypasses. I guess highways have names.
Yeah.
In Tokyo, they tend to be called something something dori. In Osaka, they're called something something suji. So when I lived in Osaka, I used to live near Mido Suji, so the Mido Avenue.
And I live close to Tohachidori.
Tohachidori. So Andy lives next to Tohachi, what would you call it, road, I guess?
Yeah, it's like one of the main arteries. It's not quite a highway, but it's not really a street. I got a question for you. So Tohachidori, what's the other street that I live on? He told me Kaido.
Yeah. So Kaido is another. Basically, there's Suji, Dori, and Kaido. They basically mean the same thing.
But in my part of the world, in my part of Tokyo, the Dori is big. The Kaido is almost like just a regular double main street.
Yeah. I'm not sure if it's just that particular one or if there's any difference Kaido is, I guess it was the old version of calling it a highway, but I don't know.
But beyond that, it's helpful to think of Tokyo as a slightly refurbished medieval village. because except for those big roads, your poster, your question asker is 100% right, 0% wrong, that the vast majority of roads have no name.
Yes.
Right? The road that I live on has no name, right? So here's how an address is expressed. And it seems like it shouldn't work, but it does.
But it does, yeah.
So I live in Tokyo To.
Tokyo City.
Mitaka Shi.
Mitaka City.
Right?
Yeah, right. Let's not get into the weeds, but basically it's a small... It's like somewhere between a city and a district of Tokyo.
Yeah. Right. Osawa Roku Chome.
So Osawa is a district of Mitaka City.
Which is inside of Tokyo.
And it's Chome is kind of like a block. It's a district. It's district number six.
I think it's like neighborhood.
Yeah.
It's a small area.
A small area.
Right. San no go.
So those two last numbers, San is the city block, which is also called the Banchi. And then the last one is what they call the sub block area or the house number.
That's correct.
Yeah. And so you'll basically have, as Andy said, so you have usually the prefecture name or the major city name. So Tokyo To. Then you have the district within Tokyo, the large district within Tokyo, which could be Shibuya-ku.
Right.
And then within Shibuya-ku, you have a smaller district, which could be something like, I'm just making this up, Nogizaka. That's a smaller district. And then the three numbers, like the district of a district of a district.
Right, it just keeps on slicing things into smaller
groups. Yeah, it's almost like a fractal pattern. And then you have the Banchi, which is the city block, and then the Go, which is the last number, which is the house number.
And now everybody knows where I live.
And now everyone knows where Andy lives. Send him fan mail.
Absolutely.
Definitely.
So, and by the way, when you come to Japan, you'll be amazed at once you get out of the city central, how narrow these roads are. That's what I'm saying. It's a medieval village just been upgraded, right? There's a lot of even in Tokyo, one lane roads where if there's a car going in one direction and another car going in the opposite direction, one of them has to give way. So it feels a lot, it feels like when I visited Wales, it's like most of the country roads were like one thing, and if there was two cars going the same direction or opposite directions, then one had to kind of pull off for a second.
When were you in Wales?
Maybe about 20 something years ago.
And do you know whereabouts in Wales you were?
Monmouth. Yes.
Nice.
Could not understand a word they were saying.
Was this a work thing?
No, just a friend of mine was there.
Oh, cool. Oh, nice. A big shout out to Angie again. She lives in Wales too.
Oh, there you go.
As does my mum.
Another woman that I can't understand what the words she's saying.
Exactly. Yeah. When we have a family gathering, it It's a bit like Lord of the Rings. I don't even know what that means. You know, they sound like they're speaking in Elven. I'm sorry, people from Wales. Okay. Okay, next question,
please,
is from Terry Lane. And Terry asks, Japan is at the forefront of a general population decline demographic crisis. Does the average person in the street express an opinion, or does the ostrich prevail? So Japan's population is declining. Do people care? Do people talk about it?
You know, I might be the ostrich. I just don't think it's a problem.
That's interesting. Why do you think that?
First of all, the world population is starting to turn around. Japan's population has been declining for some time before that. Mm. So Japan's population decline precedes other countries, you know, numerically. The one problem that it causes is that for a time, there's going to be far more old people than the young people needed to take care of them.
Sure.
Right. It's called collectively the graying of Japan. Right.
Sure.
Is that an issue? Yes, it is. Is it a crisis? No, it's not. I don't think so. And I think as a parent of a single child, Japan's not a country that mandates, you know, any kind of limitations on how many kids you can have, not like some countries, but we're just kind of naturally not having as many kids. There's no medical reason why it's happening. It's a cultural thing. Just kids, young adults aren't having as many kids. That will mean that there's more resources for everybody. I mean, when you get so many, you know, so few people that, you know, we can't hold society together, that's a crisis. But if we cut Japan's population in half, it'd still be a pretty populated country.
It seems that there's a bottleneck, or maybe it's the opposite of a bottleneck.
If you take a look at it like a graph, there's like this giant egg, this giant bubble of people that just keeps on moving up as they age out. And of course, you know, at some point they'll just die off.
Right.
And by the time, and actually we're the bottom of that bubble. So, right. So Alex, when you and I, you know, finally kick the bucket, then it's going to be a new, more linear kind of place. Right. So is it still declining? Yeah, sure. But not like it was after the baby booms, you know, a while ago.
Yeah. So actually you're quite optimistic about the future for Japan.
I'll be honest. I think that overpopulation is also a problem.
Sure,
and I think
it's
a far more pressing problem than underpopulation has never, until quite recently, ever been presented as a problem, right?
Yeah,
and maybe that makes me an ostrich, and I'll take that. But I've always kind of felt like overpopulation is more risky to the species than underpopulation.
But what do you think? Answers to info@learnjapanesepod.com. Would love to hear your ideas.
The comments are just going to flame me out.
Totally. Okay. Next one is from Kumaheyama-san. Kumaheyama-san sent in like 6 questions.
Wow.
And they're all hilarious. We're going to do 2. I'm going to give you 2, Kumaheyama-san, because they were very good questions. And you also play an invaluable role on the Discord channel as a very friendly, fun person to talk to. So you get 2 questions. It's your birthday today. So question number 1 is, what are your can't live without items from the konbini? So what convenience store items can you not live without, Andy?
Onigiri.
What flavor onigiri?
I'll take basically anything that I can read, but usually it turns out to be mayonnaise and something.
Right, right. I love the one called Shee Chicken.
Shee Chicken, yeah.
Shee Chicken. I will.
By the way, what is Shee Chicken?
It's tuna,
it's
right?
It's tuna, yeah.
Yeah, it's tuna. Yeah, I love that. Sea chicken, tuna, why not? So yeah, I'll go with you on the onigiri. And the other one is the 7-Eleven coffee. That's the best coffee on earth.
Agree to disagree.
Oh, Andy, how
you know,
dare you?
You know what? It's, and the, you know, I have a 7-Eleven close to my house, right? So 7-Eleven's kind of my convenience of choice. And they have these, you know what UFO is?
Oh yeah, yeah, the noodles, right?
They every once in a while they have UFO noodles, yakisoba in a bun, and jeez, are those good! It's like a hot dog bun with UFO noodles. And it's just, it's the, well, I've given up on life.
I've given up on life. I am not treating my body like a temple anymore. Hey, here's to double carbs.
Double carbs, yeah, right.
They say drinking beer. Question number two from Kuma. Hey, Yama-san, are you playing any music in your spare time? Could we hear some?
We are amazing musicians, but we are not active musicians because we are so busy at other things.
We don't have time. Andy is busy writing books, and I'm busy to, well, I love my job. I'm like talking to people who are learning how to use Pro Tools and how to, you know, use all this software. So we're pretty busy.
There's two songs, and we maybe, I'll give them to you, Alex, so that you can share them to whoever on the podcast. The one of them is a song, remember Phone Time?
Oh yeah, Phone Time is my, I love that song.
So Phone Time was this, and Alex and I were new friends, and this has got to be 4 or 5 years ago that you said, you know, I had this song, I was with some folks at a izakaya, we were drunk and we were going, Phone Time. And so basically we did a little rock song called Phone Time. And it says, Phone Time, Phone Time.
Everybody look at your phones.
Basically, get your phones ringing. And we made a little kind of 80s rock homage to it.
Right.
And that turned out pretty well. So we did that.
So you know the genesis story of that song, right? So we're sitting on a train going somewhere with my buddies, and my genius friend Sandra, who's just absolutely hilarious. We're all sitting on the train. We're going off. I think we were going hiking or somewhere. I forget where we were going. We're all sitting in a group, and then people, you know, we were kind of bored, so we started pulling out our phones and we're looking at our phones, and then suddenly Sandra starts singing, phone time, everybody look at your phones, totally making fun of the fact that, like, we're not talking to each other, we're just like got our heads buried in our phones. So she composed that song. That's where I learned it.
I thought you learned it at a drunken party.
Well, it basically was a drunken party, but on a train.
Nice.
So there you go. So anyways, there's Phone Time, but you recently composed a really cool jazz piece.
So can I tell the story of this?
Please do.
So if you ever get a chance to come to Japan, you should go to an area called Chofu.
Mm.
Now, Chofu is an interesting little area. It's kind of off in the ruralish part of Tokyo, off on the west side, and it's close to where I live, actually. And I have haunted their Ekimai from time to time, and there's a really nice place called Myojo, very cool place. Just kind of sit down, you know, strike up conversations, you know, it's a real relaxing hang. One of the workers there, one of the bartenderesses is a little named Mako. And she's a sweetheart. She's just so nice. And she goes, Andy, do you like cheesecake? And I said, sure. I mean, look at my body. Yes, I like any kind of cake. And also, for whatever it's worth, any kind of cheese. So yes, cheesecake right down the middle. And so next thing I know is I get a text from the manager, are you coming over? Because Mako has made a cheesecake for you. She made a homemade cheesecake because I told her I like cheesecake.
That's amazing.
It's amazing. It's just so nice. It wasn't just for me. It was for everybody. She made it because she asked me what I like. I told her. And I said, I thank you so much. I said, I'm going to write you a song. And she goes, ooh. And I'm like, what style? And she goes, big band. I'm like, okay, great. I haven't written a big band song in forever. And so what I did was I took a melody that I've had in my brain bouncing around for decades. And I like never have had any reason to write any big band stuff, but I had one now. So I wrote this thing called Mako's Cheesecake Blues. and it turned out really well. And Alex, you played guitar on it.
I certainly did. And Andy was telling me, yeah, I'm doing a big band piece and I need some guitar. It's called Mako Cheesecake Blues. And I was like, okay.
and it turned out really nicely. It's all, so we'll put it in there. I want to get it played live sometime. It's all MIDI except for bass, Alex's guitar and a tuba solo on my part.
Right.
But
right.
It's all written. It's all composed live, but it's all MIDI instruments.
Maybe we can do, after this Corona madness, we could do a live performance of it. That would
be great.
Really cool.
It'd be awesome. I still need to score it out. But yeah, so that's what we do. So we do music for a living. So you think we'd be a lot more active than we are. But we've got those two things. We'll throw it out there.
And I might compose a little bit more music for Learn Japanese Pod, maybe for cutting between scenes and things.
There you go.
Yeah. So there you go.
It'll be called Scene Time.
Watch Alex not actually compose any music. Okay, a new question. This is from Chris in Vietnam, and he says, realistically, what sort of salary do you need to get by in big cities like Tokyo and Osaka? Most people's entry to living in Japan is through teaching English, where the salary is between 220 to 250,000 yen per month, which is around, just take a couple of zeros off that and you get the dollar amount. That's around $2,500. I've heard people say even 250,000 yen is not enough and you'll be broke. But I've also heard it's fine for most lifestyles. I'm teaching English in Vietnam and wanted to make the switch. I'd be interested to know your opinions on this. Andy, let's get your thoughts on salaries in Japan, and then I'll tell you a little bit about my ancient history as an English conversation teacher in Tokyo.
I think that salary that the question answerer or asker is proposing, while it may technically be a living wage, you're not going to have any kind of fun at all. And if anything ever happens to you unexpectedly or bad, or if you're just, there's no fault tolerance in that kind of a salary.
Yeah,
and
so
I hate to see people come and then something happen and they're, you know, they wind up getting screwed.
Yeah, so maybe like a health condition or some kind of financial disaster or some accident, you don't have a buffer.
Yeah.
It's possible. I did it. I've done it. About 11 billion years ago when I used to teach English, I think the basic salary. So just to explain here, there's such a thing as an English conversation teacher. And so some of the big companies are ECC. One of the old companies was Nova. They're still around. Geos. And basically they hire you for 29.5 hours a week. Why is that, Andy?
Because you have to hire them full time if they go for 30.
Exactly. And you get like an hour lunch break. So if you work for 29.5 hours a week, they don't have to give you that hour lunch break. And you also tend to make around 250,000 down to 210,000 after tax. Now, I'd lived on that salary. I just wasn't taking helicopters to work or driving through Roppongi in my Lamborghini or drinking champagne every night.
Well, there's also, keep in mind that it depends upon what the package is of the employer, because sometimes they'll put you up, they'll take care of your transport, they'll do, you know, there's other things that will reduce your expenditures per
month. You know, Chris, you might want to think about doing the JET program.
That's what I was thinking about, yeah.
Right, yeah, I think that's where you're going. And basically, the JET program is a fantastic way to get to Japan because they take care of all your housing and everything for you. I was making probably a little more than 250,000 yen a month. However, my rent was $200 a month. $200 a month was my rent.
Because they were taking care of it.
Because they were taking care of it. And I was in the countryside. And I didn't have... There was literally nothing to spend my money on. Now, I don't know if that appeals to you, being in the countryside in the middle of nowhere. I personally had a fantastic time. I loved it. They take care of all the paperwork and everything. And I personally love the JET program. They say that the JET program, the experience will be as varied as the people who take part. But that's maybe something you might want to think about. And then the other thing I would say, that if you come to Japan as an English conversation teacher and you want to have a career in English teaching and you want to develop that career, there are ways to do that. One of them is to become a business English trainer. Another one is to get your TEFL, TEFL, yeah. The other one is to get your TEFL qualification and or master's in linguistics or a language. And then you can usually get university English teaching gigs, and those usually pay a lot better. So that's another way you can do it. Or you can do completely random jobs with absolutely no plan at all whatsoever, and then randomly end up in a music industry job like I did. Pure luck.
You know, I was the first gig I ever had here was as a musician for Tokyo Disney. They hired me over. They took care of all my, everything. So they put me up and all that stuff. So it was kind of like a musician's jet program. And I won't say how much I made, but it was pure profit, right? Mm-hmm. That's different though. If you think you're going to come here to Tokyo and you're making $2,500 a month, you're living in a cardboard box in the middle of the street and eating gravel.
Andy is exaggerating a little bit, but it's
Monty Python reference.
There. Monty Python, right. We dreamt of gravel. I think, hey, listen, if you wanted to come to Japan, you'd never been here, and you wanted to experience it for a year, and this is all about the experience, definitely do it. I highly recommend teaching English.
Absolutely.
It's fantastic. It's really great. If you're thinking about putting down roots here, you need to think about career development, and being an English conversation teacher in itself is very, very challenging to develop your career in that area, I think, in my humble opinion. But you can step sideways into business English training or university English training teaching. What I did is I actually joined the HR department of a company that hired the English teachers, which was a good position to have. That was really good. And then from that, I somehow managed to find my way into the job I'm doing today. But there are ways to do it, but $250,000 is a little on the cheap side, I would say.
It might get you here, but you want to think about moving up as quickly as possible. Because again, if you get asthma or if you get a bike accident or anything like that, it can... that one expenditure can send you into a much different place,
My dentist told me today to change my filling would cost $600. So there you go. $600. Whoa. Thank you, Chris from Vietnam. That's a really good question. Okay, on to a couple of questions here. Now, I group these questions together because I think they're talking about the same thing, which is about learning Japanese and being motivated to learn Japanese. So a big shout out to Marcus Zeet and Lana Jiripu. So Marcus says, I took a 2-month break from learning Japanese. How do I get back to learning it? That's a good question. Zeet-san says, what are some great ways to approach learning Japanese after reaching an intermediate level to keep making steady progress without losing motivation, and to consolidate my grasp on grammar and never-ending kanji readings? And one more question. This is from Lana Chiripu-san. And they say, how can I surpass the bottleneck of my kaiwa, my conversation abilities? I've been making friends from Japan, trying to communicate in a friendly way, but there's the situation I think I'm not making any progress at all. I study grammar patterns and vocab, but it's hard sometimes to pick out what natives are saying. Is there any ninja technique to supersonic my learning process? So those are kind of in the same kind of area. They're really, really good questions. It's like, I'm either getting back into learning after a break, or I've kind of hit a plateau, I'm losing motivation, I'm not sure what to study next. So here's what I would say. My big advice is, you get good at what you do. So if you want to, for example, become good at speaking, you just need to speak. I know that doesn't sound like great advice, but trust me, it works. So I think number one, remind yourself of your goals. Why are you studying Japanese in the first place? You may have many, many reasons. Maybe you just enjoy studying languages and you just like using, you're just like learning Japanese on an app or something. Or maybe you're moving to Japan because you're married to a Japanese person and you're going to make your life here. Or perhaps you're going to be a simultaneous interpreter. There are many reasons why you want to do that. So first of all, clarify what your goals are. Mm-hmm. Okay, why are you studying Japanese? Once you get the why, the how should come relatively easy. Now, the second one is, like I said before, you get good at what you do. So do what you want to get good at it. So basically, if you're not good at listening, you just need to do more listening. If you want to get good at speaking, you actually have to use Japanese in context with Japanese people. Now, before you get all freaked out and, but I'm shy and I don't like speaking to people. Sorry, you've got to do it.
You know, so it's interesting that a couple of your, of the folks there that were asking the question said, you know, I've got some Japanese friends and I want to learn how to talk to them. Mm. So I'm studying conversational Japanese. I'm going to go out on a limb. Studying conversational Japanese so that you can talk to Japanese people is arguably not the way to go, because conversational Japanese books is not how Japanese people speak.
Yeah, the textbooks aren't how they speak. Yeah,
you know, and I'll be honest, I've learned more actual real Japanese just by sitting down. Now, in my case, I have the luxury of doing it face to face, sitting down with somebody and say, hey, man, it was cold today. Yeah, so. How do you say it's cold? I usually say, ah, samui desu, ne. Yeah. And they'll take me in a different direction. And you have a little pad of paper, you write it down and you use it the next time that you sit down with that person or another person. And you just pick up the way that they're actually speaking. And every Japanese person I know has the patience of a saint, and they will let you learn like that. And they'll help you. They'll be really jazzed at it.
Japanese people are like super, super supportive and interested in people who even speak just the tiniest bit of Japanese. They're very, very supportive.
If you're trying, then that's what you do. And you'll learn the words that aren't in the book.
Yeah,
like exactly. Gozaru.
Yeah, gozaru. Yeah, all that
or
kind of stuff.
Or bimyo, which is my favorite word in the world.
Or yamete, Andy, yamete.
Oh,
we hear that so many times in the bar. Yeah. Every day. But one thing you might want to do is, look, I'm not saying don't read your textbooks. I'm not saying don't learn your vocab lists. But whatever your goal is, you need to do that thing in order to get better at it. You actually need to use Japanese in context with Japanese people. I would
completely argue. Books, websites, you know, study materials, they have their place. It's just not the only place.
Yeah. So I think I totally get where you're coming from. And I think there's that certain time in your journey to learning Japanese where you're really, really stuck with your textbooks. It's difficult to pry you away from them with a crowbar. But you've got to get your hands dirty, so to speak, and get out there and try and use your Japanese. I hope that was even 1% useful to you. I hope. Anyway, I mean, and the other thing I would say is like, my Japanese isn't native level, but it's a lot better than it was. And it's through having to use it at work, using it with my friends. Today I had a long conversation with my dentist. I learned the word for crowning a tooth, cement, your breath smells. Lots of useful Japanese.
Disgusting.
Never come back to my dentist's office ever again. Okay, this question is from David Cafe. And this question, Andy, is squarely directed at you.
Okay.
This is hilarious, this question. Question for Andy. Why do Japanese mastering engineers put reverb on everything?
Is it actually really
funny? That's actually a question, yeah.
So let's go to a Japanese word. Gucci.
Gucci. Complaining.
So I'm going to gratuitously. So if you're not in the audio industry, just zone out for the next 20, 30 minutes.
No. It's a small industry here in Japan. Okay. Everyone knows each other.
So okay, so this is to whom?
This is to David Cafe.
So Dave, I feel your pain. I do a lot of STEM. We're going to go into tech.
Okay, so for non-musicians, we apologize. We're going to geek out on some audio engineering stuff here.
So I do a lot of STEM mixes for premixes for pop music. And like, for example, one time I did some string mixes using East West, and I put some hall reverb on all the stems, and the stems sounded fantastic just as is, right? And I'm thinking to myself, this is fantastic. This is how I want everybody to give me stems on. So I gave these stems. They had just a little bit of hall reverb, perfect as it is. All you have to do, a little bit of EQ, a little bit of levels, you're done. You know what they did? They put reverb on it. They put reverb on the reverb. And the whole mix went out of phase with itself. And if you put it on, if you summed it together to mono, you'd hear almost nothing. That's how almost completely it phase canceled. It was absolute rubbish. And come to find out, they put the reverb on there because that's what they do. They put reverb on the tracks. And it's just sometimes, I'm not saying with everybody, there's some good, like Hotoda Go, he's fantastic. Jeff Miyahara, really good. They're thinkers. But there are some engineers in Japan that are just going through some very pre-programmed motions, and you think for a second that they're not actually really critically listening to what it is that they're mixing or mastering.
They're not mixing with their ears, so
they're, to speak. They're not. They're kind of mixing with their you know process, right?
Yeah, right.
And that's tremendously unfair to say to some Japanese engineers, and I don't mean to paint everybody with the same brush, but it sounds like this guy has had some experience with that. I have had similar experiences, and they are tremendously frustrating. Thank you for your question.
Thank you for your question.
Now everybody can join back
now,
in.
Now I see the audio community in Tokyo is slowly pulling out their knives. Who are these foreigners besmirching the name of Japanese engineers? Damn you.
Not all, but enough that it's been a problem for me.
Next question is from Kirino-san. Kirino-san asks, I know that Japan only covers 70% of health insurance. Is it problematic to often get sick or injured in Japan? What are the costs of medical treatments? Yeah, so if your bill is $100, you pay $30 of that. But remember that you have to pay the premiums before that every month. It's usually taken out of your salary. I personally don't have any problems with it. I think it's quite a good system. I've never had to pay a huge amounts of money.
Yeah, Japan medicine is, if you're employed, is semi-socialist, socialized medicine. I'm from the States where, you know, if you have a 2-week hospital stay, you're feeling that in the pocketbook pretty hard. I'll share one story just before the coronavirus hit late last year, late 2 years ago. My daughter had very real bad tummy aches and she got a fever and she was really, really sick. Come to find out that she had massive appendicitis and it was really infected. It was so infected that they had to keep her in the hospital hooked up to medicine to bring the infection under control so that they could then take out at a later date the appendix. And she was in the hospital for a good solid 2 weeks. And I was thinking to myself, well, that's why I have a savings account. It's gone.
Right. Because you're thinking like an American.
I was thinking like an American. And I'm like, geez, this is going to hurt bad, but this is why you save money for a rainy day. And I remember Sachiko was back and we were happy to have her back. And I said to Junko-san, my wife, I said, so how much did it turn out to be? And she goes, Ju-san-man-en, which is about $1,300. $1,300. And I'm like, I thought for sure in my head I was transposing
it was another zero
or so
on that. Yeah, right.
And I'm like, really? And she goes, Sima-san, it's $1,300? No problem. And she goes, don't worry. The insurance will pay us back for that. And I'll be darned if the insurance didn't pay that $1,300 back.
Completely.
So it did not cost us, at the end, a red cent.
It was completely free.
Completely taken care of by the insurance that an employed person gets. Now, Alex is in a little bit of a different position for now because he's a contractor with Avid, but he will be an employee soon, I'm confident. So he's in a little bit of a different position. But once you get employed, man, your days of worrying about big medical bills, I won't say they're over, but they're far less of a danger than they are, for example, in my home country.
Yeah, so that's our position on it. And if you disagree, well, we'll
change it.
We'll change it. Yeah, we'll change it.
If that's our opinion. If you don't like it, we'll change it.
This is like the putting opinions out on the internet is like, one of these is going to come back and smash me in the face. Or as I read the other day, LinkedIn, where people go to find jobs. Twitter, where people go to lose them. Okay, so I think we've got time for a couple more questions, and then we might wrap it up. Again, just another apology to all you wonderful people who wrote in and didn't get their questions answered. I do promise that I will answer them eventually, so please be patient, and we will get round to it sometime. So I think we could do maybe one or two more, and let's go this time to Conrad. Now, Conrad says, Konnichiwa. Alex and Andy, my question is how you two feel about the very broad Japanese use of the word inaka.
Ah.
I've heard people use the word refer to big cities with over 1 million citizens living there, and sometimes even just refer to anywhere that isn't Tokyo or Osaka. How do you two feel about the way it's used, and do you think with the broad usage that countryside is an accurate translation for it? That is such a great question. That is an amazing question, Conrad. My gosh. So if you look at a dictionary, inaka is translated generally as countryside, i.e. not the town, not an urban environment. Now, Andy, I happen to know that you are definitely an inaka boy.
I am from a village of less than a few thousand people. I had like something like 200 people in my high school.
That's like a hamlet.
It was actually a village next to a hamlet. Yes. But that's real country, you know, with farms and the whole nine yards. And I agree with you. I think the word inaka is broadly applied. And it's funny because you'll see people that are in Tokyo, they'll say like, Chofu is a city. It's a city, city style. But Shibasaki, inakapoi.
Right.
I look at Shibasaki, which is two stations away from Chofu, right? Yeah. And it is marginally more suburban.
Yeah.
But it is far from what we would consider to be
the countryside. Yeah.
And I think, I think part of it is the fact that the way that people are grouped is in Japan is different than in other countries. In other countries, you have city centers that kind of transition out into
countryside,
rural spaces. In Japan, we clump up into cities and stack ourselves on top of each other. Mm. And then if you're not living in the city, you're living in the, in a Studio Ghibli style countryside with right. the rice paddies and the whole nine yards. So if you drive out of Tokyo, if you take the train in any direction out of Tokyo Station for more than an hour, you're very close to getting to real countryside.
Sure.
Now, they'll call that inaka. Mm. That's real countryside. But they also call that transitional area
inaka.
That isn't the dense city. They'll also call that inaka.
Now, I've got a theory about where you're living at the moment, which is Mitakashi, right?
Yes.
You're actually in Mitakashi itself, right?
Technically speaking, right.
So Mitakashi actually used to be completely countryside back in the day. We're talking about kind of up until like the 70s, I think.
Yeah.
It was definitely what you would consider countryside. And the other thing is that all those Ghibli movies you've ever watched, a lot of them are actually based around Mitaka. Uh-huh. Or they're inspired from the countryside that Hayao Miyazaki was inspired by when he was a kid.
Right, because he's in
Kichijoji, right?
Which is right next to Mitaka.
Exactly. And Mitaka is actually the last bit of planned greenbelt that survived the massive industrialization after World War II. So Japan did actually have a grand plan of how it was going to be developed. It was going to be like American style, I think, grid streets. There was going to be a center and these little satellite areas. And then no one paid the slightest bit of attention to the plan. And it just turned into this beautifully messy, spaghettified, I don't know what to call it. It's a mess.
It is a mess.
A beautiful, wonderful, exciting mess, I should hasten to add.
A city planner's fever dream.
Exactly, exactly. And so Mitaka, Nogawa Koen, is the last tiny clump of greenbelt that actually survived people completely ignoring town planning for like 50 years.
And by the way, and they'll call that Inaka. Mm. I don't, because I've lived on a farm. I'll call that the suburbs.
Yeah, yeah. But, to me, Mitaka is the suburbs. But yeah, I've heard people call it Inaka.
But when you get so much of the country that basically lives in the inner city, it seems like that's the country because it's so much different than their urban world. Mm. So yeah, I think you're the person asking the question is 100% right, 0% wrong, that the term Inaka is more generally applied than it should be. And if you're really talking about real countryside, you should add the word Oni in front of it.
Oni Inaka. or Doinaka, right?
Right, Doinaka.
Yeah, Doinaka. Yeah. One of the first phrases I learned in Japanese was nani mo nai. Nani mo nai. So I remember it was literally my first week in Japan, and this guy was talking about, I think he'd been to his grandma's place out in the countryside for Obon,
right,
for the Obon holiday season. And you know, it's very traditional to go back to your hometown during the summer. And he said it was like kata inaka is the same as do inaka, which is the same as oni inaka, which means like super super country, way out there, nothing there. And then the next sentence he said was nani mo nai.
There's nothing out there.
Yeah, so that's one of the things I like. Conrad, that was a fantastic question.
Really good question.
Clever chap, that Conrad.
Nice.
Last question.
All right.
Last question, and I think we'll wrap it
up. Make it a good one, Alex.
This is going to be a good one. This is a good one. And this is Lycos, who is from the Discord forum. He is a very active member and a jolly nice fellow from Mexico, actually.
Nicely done.
¿Cómo estás usted? I mean,
lo siento.
Lo siento, no hablo español. ¿Qué onda, güey? Okay, so he asks, what are your favorite festivals? Which ones would you recommend to your listeners? That is a fantastic, fantastic question, because festivals are like restaurants. There's no single restaurant I would recommend to you, because pretty much every single one is fantastic. So there are some famous festivals, which I will definitely recommend to you later on in this answer. But the great thing about living in Tokyo also Osaka is that each district that we were talking about, each cho, they have their own mini festival. And you can just like randomly walk into one by accident and you'll find yourself in this just amazing, colorful, fantastic festival, usually around Obon, which is held during, is it August, I think, and people get together and they do traditional dances and they eat traditional festival food. And it's absolutely fantastic.
God, there's nothing better than that stuff.
It's so great. The festival
is so wonderfully bad for you.
It's so bad for you. I remember. It's wonderful.
I remember I had just moved to my place in Mitaka, and we were just kind of getting used to it. And I'm walking around to kind of explore the area, and I go to Hitomi Kaido, which is that cross street. And in the distance, I hear yoisha, 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 and I'm like, somebody's chanting. What the heck's going on? And it was a whole bunch of guys with the thing on.
Omikoshi.
Yeah. So, omikoshi, so they're yeah. And they're wearing the little Jinbeis and the whole nine yards, and they're bouncing around. They're clear. They're all red faced. They're partying drunk. Already started.
Right.
And I'm watching. They're carrying the big platform stuff, which is a very heavy thing. And they're going, I'm like, you know what I think I'll do? I think I'll just go ahead and follow them for a while. And I followed them for a couple blocks, and then they ended, and that's where the party started. And they ended, and that was, they had the festival, and they had the yakisoba.
Oh, nice.
They had the, you know, the yakitori, basically anything yaki.
Yeah.
And barbecued. It was so good. And you got the, the soda with the marble.
Oh, Lamune.
Lamune. The summertime.
The Japanese festival is an epicenter of Japanese culture. It's absolutely amazing. It's Japanese culture at its best. So as for recommendations, I would recommend any local festival in Tokyo during August or September, any local festival in Osaka, same time, August, September. But there are some big ones, actually.
Yeah.
One of the biggest ones is Gion Matsuri, which is one of the Daisan Matsuri. What's it called? Daisan Matsuri. One of the big three Matsuris, one of the big, most famous festivals in Japan. That one's held in Kyoto.
Right, in the Gion district.
Gion district. It's really, really, really hot. Even if you're wearing a kimono, it's boiling hot at that time of year. But absolutely amazing. I think before this horrible corona stuff started, I think they had about 1.5 million visitors to that festival. So it's huge. It's absolutely massive.
And don't forget New Year's.
Oh, yeah, right.
New Year's, if you go to the right place, New Year's itself is a festival. I remember, forget what it said. Don't forget Sakura.
Oh, yeah, Sakura season, yeah.
So the cherry blossom season, you go, if you want a festival, you take yourself over to Ueno Park.
Oh,
for the cherry blossom times,
yeah.
Wear your body armor and have a can of mace in the back pocket. But there's no way you're not going to have a good time.
Yeah, the hanami is just amazing. It's so cool. That's definitely a good one. Hey, listen, I've changed my mind. We're going to do one last question.
Woohoo!
And this is actually from two people. So we are killing two birds with one stone. So actually, yeah. So we're going to answer two questions for the price of one. And these questions are from Rolando and Marion. So Rolando asks, what is a good method to improve our listening skills? Japanese is too fast, even if I know the grammar and the vocabulary. And then Marion asks, hi, I am a complete beginner and I enjoy your podcast. And I can understand some of the things you say when you go full Japanese ninja mode. but recently I started watching this show called Terrace House, and they speak too fast. I can barely make anything out, only a few words. Is this normal? It discourages when I hear them talk and I cannot make out a single sentence. Okay, so basically you're asking, how can I improve my listening skills? Listen. Okay, that's the answer. Okay, so... So here's the thing. There's this idea that like full immersion or total immersion is what you need in a language to improve your listening skills. Remember, when you were a kid, you spent the first 2 years of your life just listening to your parents and not actually speaking. So it does take a long time. However, the problem with immersion when you're a beginner is you just can't understand anything. And it's not surprising if you get discouraged or overwhelmed and you give up. So there are some amazing resources online that you can use to improve your listening skills, even if you're a beginner. And so basically, here are some recommendations for places where you can get some easy listening practice. So first one is NHK News Web Easy. So this is a website created by NHK. It features extremely simple news written in kanji and hiragana, but the kanji actually has furigana, so if you can't read the kanji, you can actually read it with the hiragana above. And it also has audio, so you can actually read and listen at the same time. And I think you'll find that's very effective when you're a beginner in Japanese and you want to improve your listening. Another one is a really good YouTube channel called Comprehensible Input. And this is a woman who does, well, she uses the comprehensible input method, i.e. she speaks entirely in Japanese with no translation to English, but she basically writes these very simple pictures on this whiteboard, and through the pictures you can comprehend what the meaning is, and you're naturally listening to natural Japanese. So that's called the comprehensible input method, which I highly recommend. They are amazing videos. I'm kind of annoyed because I wish I had thought of that for Learn Japanese Pod. Damn you, comprehensible Japanese. It's such a good YouTube channel. I highly recommend it. And the other one is actually a website, not so much for listening, but for reading. It's called tadoku.org. That's tadoku.org. And you want to do /Japanese. So that's tadoku.org/Japanese. And what you'll find is a lot of easy graded readers with the text and also the audio. So that's another great way to improve your reading and also your listening. It's easy enough for beginners, and it's interesting enough to keep you interested and not lose motivation. So I highly recommend using those resources. They're completely free, which is good. And listen to Learn Japanese Pod.
There you go. I will agree with you, though, that there's a difference between slow Japanese, and if you go just a little bit too fast, like when my daughter and my wife start to get going at the dinner table, it sounds like two modems trying to connect to each other. it's just like, you know, it's okay, I'm holding on, and then all of a sudden it's, and it's like, okay, I give up. I understand that frustration.
You have to stick at it. Listen, there's no learn to listen in 1 week. Three easy steps for learning perfect Japanese listening. That it doesn't exist. It takes time. It takes hard work. But you will get there. It will get easier. You need to listen. Again, if you can and you don't feel overwhelmed, don't stop listening to Terrace House. And don't feel bad if you can't understand anything from Terrace House. If you took a Japanese person who was a beginner in English and you got them to watch Fast and Furious 7, whatever the latest, do you think they would understand a word that was being said? Although I must say that the first time I watched the movie Traffic with Benicio del Toro, I couldn't understand a word he was saying because I knew a bit of very basic Spanish, but I didn't understand Mexican Spanish. And then I actually went to Mexico for 6 months, studied the language, and then I randomly watched the movie again, and then I understood about half of what he was saying, and man, was it rude. So listening takes a long time. It really does. And I understand that sense of frustration, and I'll never understand anything ever. But the more you do, the better. Just keep at it.
I'm reluctant to bring this up.
Go on.
But Alex is 100% right, 0% wrong, that if you listen, it will insinuate itself into your brain despite any efforts not to. And I know this to be true because my daughter has discovered a show that she's very interested in, and it's in English. Some of you may have heard of this. It's called South Park.
And just to explain for the listeners that Andy is American and his wife is Japanese, but I would consider that Sachiko, yes, is a Japanese kid.
She's a Japanese kid
who happens to have an American dad.
That's exactly it.
She's not a kid who's, you know, half conversant in, half fluent in English and Japanese of equal measure. I think she's a Japanese kid with great listening skills and happens to have an American father.
That's exactly it. She's watching it, and she's really getting into the characters and all that stuff. And I'm like, she's 16, all right, so she could start to handle this stuff. And I've told her so many times that I know I'm starting to annoy her. I'm like, I'm happy that you're listening. I'm a little concerned at what you're listening to. Just understand that there's rude English. And she goes, I know, Dad. And of course, has she dropped a couple F-bombs? Yes, she has. So it will insinuate itself regardless of any best efforts to the contrary.
You killed Kenny. You bastard.
She's done it. But I can't deny her English has gotten better as a result.
You were saying that she dropped the F-bomb with perfect grammar.
She did.
That's good.
It's like I was equally mortified and proud, right? Because she swore in the perfect style, right?
Right. Oh. Andy, it has been an absolute pleasure. It always is. Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast here today and allowing us to pick your brains. We got some amazing questions, and Andy, you gave some amazing answers. Thank you so much.
Well, my pleasure.
Again, huge apologies to those of you who did write in and didn't get your questions answered, I should say. I will get to them in some shape or form. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. Keep studying Japanese. Keep at it. All you need is a little every day, and I promise you will get there. Because if an idiot like me can learn Japanese, Pod...
How hard can it be?
How hard can it be? Exactly. Hey, check out the main website at learnjapanesepod.com. If you have a question, please email me at info@learnjapanesepod.com. Check out our Discord channel. Meet the friendly, supportive, wonderful, amazing, cool members on our Discord channel. You can find that at learnjapanesepod.com. Just click on the button Discord. You can find us on Twitter at Japanese Podcast. You can find us on Facebook. And no, I don't do dances on TikTok, but never mind. Hey, everyone. Thanks so much for listening. Andy, thanks for coming today.
Oh, I loved it.
Let's do it again sometime.
Soon.
Take care, everyone. See ya. Bye.
Bye.